What up, everybody? It is your boy, Duke. This is the Talking Soccer Podcast, episode 25, or episode 3, if you're new to us just from the iTunes and Podbean portion of the podcast. I'm your host, Duke. You can find me on Twitter, at DukeDFS, Twitch, at DukeDFS, Instagram, at DukeDFS underscore, and of course, you can find me on EliteFantasy.com, talking all things DFS, Elite Sports Betting for all my betting information, and do not forget about our boys over at FantasyGuru.com for all of those season-long leagues. I'm sure you're like me. Your draft's coming up. For many of you, it's the best day of the season. I know for me it is. I'm knee-deep in soccer, EPL, Champions League. We got all these qualifiers going on right now. Let's get to the real deal so we can put some articles out, win some money. I don't have time to research NFL. I rely on all the quality of our staff over at FantasyGuru.com for our season-long needs. I just show up, six-pack, 12-pack, case of beer, and good intentions with a couple tabs open from FantasyGuru.com. Made the playoffs like 6 years in a row. Like I say all the time, I was a subscriber before a contributor. Get on over there, give those guys a subscribe. Of course, if you haven't yet subscribed, like, review to this podcast, Talking Soccer under the Guru Elite Podcast header. Now, how about your boy giving out straight winners for free on the podcast? You're welcome. I believe we are 3-0-1 with free picks on the pod. Of course, last week we won Tottenham plus 1.5. We jumped on it early on Monday for subscribers. Got it at even money. Late in the week, got all the way to, I think it was minus 140 right before kickoff. Tottenham plus 1.5. Great result. Good W. And then we pushed on the West Ham draw, no bet. And that, my friends, is why sometimes we sacrifice a little bit of juice for the draw, no bet. Should West Ham have won that game? Maybe. Were we unlucky to get a tie? I want to call it that. However, give me my money back. Let's live to fight another day. Two free bets at the end of this pod. If you don't want to hear me drag on about our DFS wins because we've been smashing it, you know the drill. Skip, skip, skip. Find them at the end of the podcast. But it wasn't just betting. It was DFS 2. Like I said, if you don't have some extra jangle in your pockets, you're doing it wrong, boys, because we have smashed it week 1, week 2. For those who don't remember, week 1, core 4 put up 74 points. Now, obviously, we need some background information. Not all slates are the same. 74 points nearly got you a 50-50 cash by itself, and that was four players, not even including the rest of the lineup. Now, how do we do this week, this past weekend, this Saturday? Well, our core four put up 104.7 points. And that's without Pookie and his 46.58 points and his three goals. He was my biggest recommendation of the day. But like I said, that's without Pookie. Who else do we have? Raheem Sterling, 22.52 points. Harry Wilson, banger of a goal. Yeah, it took a deflection. Guess what? Still shows up as 10 points on DraftKings, 19.78 points at cheap, cheap, cheap. Lucas Digne, 22.02 points. Did pick up an injury late. I think it was like the 70th minute. So we missed out on a little bit of extra value, extra points there. Still made more than value. And of course, KDB, the man, the myth, the legend, 40.38 points. Once again, very close to cashing without anybody else. Like I said, that's not even including Timu Pukki and his three goals and nearly 47 points. So yeah, it was a green wave Saturday for the Elite Mafia. That's back-to-back Saturdays with monster cashes. We'll look to keep it rolling this week. Speaking of which, who do we got this week? Well, we do have a Friday game. We're back to the Friday games, and hint, hint, we have a bet on this game. Aston Villa, Everton, I predict a bit of a snooze fest, but it's a little something to get the weekend kicked off. Now, how about bright and early Saturday morning? Perhaps surprise team of the year, although it's early, we're two games in, Norwich City. Surprisingly big underdogs to Chelsea who travel to Norwich for this game. Norwich plus 320. We might be looking to that too. Are you impressed with Chelsea at this point? I'm not. Brighton plus 150, Southampton plus 210. Southampton off to a struggling start. Brighton, surprisingly, in the top four. What? Manchester United, unlucky not to get the win against Wolves. Pogba misses the PK. A little controversy there as to who is going to take it. Minus 275 home favorites over the shitty-ass Crystal Palace, plus 700. Sheffield United, we knew they were going to be solid defensively. Boy, have they made the case for that. Plus 225 at home to Leicester, who I think is maybe the fifth best team in the league, yet still only has 2 points, I believe. Plus 125 on the road. Watford at home. What is going on with Watford? Our boys West Ham, who we should have won some money on last week. Plus 255 road dogs. Watford plus 110 at home. Are you putting your money behind this Watford team right now? Because I'm not. The over sitting at 2.5. Minus 145 juice. Maybe some more we go in DFS. But then we look at this total for the afternoon hammer. Liverpool hosting Arsenal. I kind of love this Saturday afternoon best game of the weekend type feel. Last weekend, obviously, we had Liverpool-Tottenham. Or Man City-Tottenham, excuse me. And then this week, Liverpool-Arsenal. Resurgent Arsenal. Molding, shaping Arsenal. And a Liverpool team who's obviously looking for 3 points. Every single week, Liverpool, big-time favorites, minus 200, home favorite over Arsenal, plus 500. Of course, I go in-depth on elitefantasy.com for each and every single game. We talk about tactics. We talk about how I think the game's going to go, game flow. We talk about individual players who might peak in each game based on how these teams match up with each other. And then, of course, we get into the actual DFS breakdown of individual teams. But let's talk about this Liverpool-Arsenal game because, like I said, I kind of like this afternoon hammers being a clash of the Titans. I mean, we saw last week future champs Liverpool are going to take on Arsenal this week. Arsenal, a little bit of identity crisis. What are they going to do? They have all this attacking talent. Still a bit of a makeshift back line. But looking at Liverpool, reminder, goalkeeper, Alisson is out. And that hurts Liverpool in so many ways. He was an integral part of their buildup, playing out of the back with his feet. He was sure-handed. Adrian, is he either of those? Will it even matter? That's the big question. Arsenal, 2 wins from 2, but they used a new back four in their second game against Burnley. I'm one who says, set a back four. Unless you have an injury or an extremely horrible run of form, do not change it. Do not sub any players out. Do not change it if you're on a winning streak or even a draw streak or even they're playing well and you're getting a bit unlucky. Continuity is the key to success for the back four. Unai Emery throws it out the window. Let's bring in a new boy, David Luiz, which was needed. He partners with Socrates in the middle. Of course, we have the experience of Nacho Monreal on the left and then the Joker on the right side. But that's not really where my focus is. My focus is further up the field. We saw Nicola Pepe come on, make a slight impact. But for me, bowl in a china shop. Extremely technical player, ended the career of somebody. Slight turn, Megsum, moves forward, pushes the ball up the field. But a little bit out of control. Still definitely finding his footing. He's a bit of a baby deer at the moment. But how about Danny Ceballos? Did he have his coming out party or what? Number one, I wasn't quite sure how they were going to morph this midfield. You know, game week one, Joe Willock playing further up the field, kind of in that number 10 role. He then slides back next to Guendouzi as two kind of CDMs and lets Ceballos play that number 10 role, and he fits like a glove there. And, of course, they started Lacazette up front, Aubameyang out wide, and that is quite the attacking trident. Now, essentially, they attacked with 3 or 4 and then defended with 6. 6 or 7 even. Can they afford to do that against the big boys? I mean, it's Burnley. You can do that. We know what Burnley are. Can you do that against Liverpool? I don't know. I don't think so. Do they try to sit and then counterattack? Well, that's kind of how Liverpool plays a little bit. Yeah, they press. They press high up the field. But when Arsenal do have possession, and they will, do Liverpool just sink back, absorb that pressure, and then hit them with Mane, hit them with Salah, hit them with Bobby Firmino? They could. I don't know if they'll need to. I'm interested to see the possession statistics from this Saturday's afternoon hammer. From a DFS perspective, obviously, we don't know exactly who's going to play, but we got a good idea. Again, full breakdown in my article. Now, how about Liverpool? Sadio Mane's early season form, bit of a joke, making me look like quite the idiot because I've said, look at these numbers. Look at these statistics. Look at the expected goals. Look at his positioning. Look at his pricing. There is no way Sadio Mane can repeat the season he had last year. And for those who forget, won a share of the Golden Boot, the top scorer in the Premier League, along with his teammate, Mo Salah, and along with Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang. Now, it's rare to have three players tie for the lead. That's crazy. But how about having two studs from the same team who aren't the champions, by the way? This isn't City. It's Liverpool, who finished second, getting a share of that golden boot. So I made this big fuss, wrote this article. Look at all these statistics. There's no way Sadio Mane can repeat this. We're going to see some regression. He just comes in, scores two freaking goals. What a dickhead. What an absolute stud is what he is. Look, I still believe in statistics. And statistically, there's 0% chance he can repeat this performance from last season, right? He's off to a hot start. He's got the two goals. Great. But for me, Bobby Firmino is the straw that stirs that drink. His work rate, his sacrifice for the team, he creates everything. He's unselfish. I think his movement will upset Socrates and Luiz and cause some issues. Reminder, last year, Liverpool spanked Arsenal 5-1 at home. Do I think it's going to be that lopsided this year? No, I don't. But I do expect 3 points from Liverpool. Now, let's talk through kind of statistics. What am I looking at that's put me on these plays week after week here? 2 weeks into the season, two absolute smashes on Saturdays. It's not just expected goals. It's not just expected assists, which are advanced statistics, right? We go quote unquote. I mean, surely they're decent indicators of success, right? We can kind of judge how a player's doing based on how he should be doing, right? We take a look at, I can't remember if it was last year or the year before that, but Doucouré, his expected goals was, you know, 23 games into the season. Well, he had 13 goals. Okay, so he's way outperforming his expected goal performance. So how do we judge that based on DraftKings or FanDuel information? Well, typically their algorithms will reward goals. So he was often overpriced for his positioning on the field, his ability when the ball gets to him. And so while we took him early in the season when his price was lower, back where it should be, we tended to fade him late in the season. And sometimes you got to bite that bullet and say, this player is not that good. He's getting extremely lucky or getting very fortunate. And we'll let the donkeys keep rostering players like that. But it's not the be-all, end-all. There's other things. It's not a vacuum, right? We're only two games in as well. So XG and XA numbers, not the best thing. Well, how about crosses? Especially for DraftKings, more so than FanDuel. How teams play largely dictate DFS success. So, for instance, last year, Huddersfield, total shit team, right? Maybe the worst in the history of the EPL. Put in a billion crosses. They were constantly behind, always trying to play catch-up. They were just whipping balls in the box. So we're looking at, you know, their wingbacks and their wingers and guys who are going to put balls in the box constantly. Again, they suck, so they were cheap, and they're getting a lot of DK points, a lot of scrub points. That's okay. We like that. So crosses, a decent place to start. And who do you think is the number one crossing team in the EPL right now? Liverpool with 56. What? I mean, just look at how they play. I would have guessed, you know, hey, maybe it's, I don't know, Leicester maybe, Burnley, someone like that who just, we know, whip balls in the box. But it's Liverpool. And I start thinking, well, why would that be? We look at how they play. They play with inverted wingers, meaning the players that play further up the field on the outside, attacking forwards, are inverted wingers, meaning their strong foot is towards the inside of the field, away from the sideline. So when we think about Mo Salah playing right wing, his strong foot is his left. So typically when he gets the ball, he likes to go at a defender, kind of juke right, cut back inside to his left foot, put a cross in the box, or take a shot on goal. Same thing on the other side. Sadio Mane plays left wing, strong foot, right foot, away from the sideline. Gets the ball, goes at a defender, jukes left, cuts inside on his right, takes a shot, puts a cross in. Now, when players do that, when Mo Salah cuts in from the right to his left, what does he have to the right? Space. He's also dragging defenders with him from the opposing team. So now whoever's in that space has room to receive the ball and cross it in the box. And of course, who are the two leading crossers for Liverpool? Trent Alexander-Arnold with 22, Andy Robertson with 13. Now, TAA obviously benefits a little bit from set pieces as well, but Liverpool, 56 crosses in two games, almost six crosses more per game than team number two, who we've mentioned, Leicester, who's put in 45. James Maddison, nearly half of those, 22, partially because he's taken 17 corners already an insane amount of corners. But goes back to the fact that I think I've seen with my own eyes, Leicester is a better team than where they currently sit in the table. Again, two games in, but they've been a bit unlucky to not be further forward in the table, thanks largely to James Maddison putting a ball in row Z from about 5 yards out against Chelsea, but I digress. Third team in crosses, Burnley, not shocking, with 44. Fourth, Tottenham, 43, and then we have three tied at fifth, Aston Villa, Sheffield United, Chelsea with 39. Now, I look at this group and I see Liverpool, Tottenham, and Chelsea all in the top five crossing teams. Teams typically that have more possession, but don't just whip balls in like, say, third place, third team with most crosses, Burnley, or an Aston Villa or a Sheffield, but more controlled, better opportunities. And then we have the teams in the bottom, eventually, we think, who are going to be fighting for survival, the Aston Villas, the Sheffields, who maybe sit more, but then get forward, put some crosses in. We take an example like Aston Villa, El Mohammedi has 11 crosses. Oliver Norwood for Sheffield with 12. Mason Mount with 12. Again, we see some set piece takers in this list. That's not everything, though. After that, expected goals, expected assist, crosses. I look at different advanced stats for position. So let's go through the list. Like for defender, I like those players who are getting forward into the attack. So I look at final third touches. And taking a look at the leaders in this category is certainly interesting and leads me to believe I should probably be grabbing some more shares of Sheffield United fullbacks. Number one, they're cheap. Number two, we have options like Lundstrom, who is listed as a defender for Sheffield, but plays in the midfield, bagged a goal yesterday or last week, made us some cash. Love that. But let's go through the list. Final third touches for defenders. Andy Robertson, 72. Baldock, Sheffield United fullback, 66. Pereira from Leicester, 65. Stevens from Sheffield, 55. So we have two wingbacks from Sheffield United in the top four touches in the final third. And again, relatively self-explanatory, but the attacking third of the half. So they're past the halfway line, moving towards their opponent's goal in the last third of the field. Fifth place, Emerson from Chelsea, and sixth place, Montoya with 54 touches from Brighton. So is it an absolute indicator of success in DraftKings points? No, but it tells me who's getting into these positions who could potentially put balls in the box. You know what we're not doing too often? Crossing from the halfway line. So unless you have a defender like Lucas Dean or Trent Alexander-Arnold who's taking set pieces, we need to look at these other statistics to see who can potentially be getting into good areas and creating good opportunities. Now, when we think about GPPs, I look at set piece threats. Who's getting on the end of these balls? Well, we know people like Chris Meffham from Bournemouth, who you would never, ever roster. Don't ever do it. Got forward, scores a goal. And actually, he has gotten on the end of a few set pieces, so maybe he's not the worst. But we see familiar names like Nathan Ake, who's got his head on three set pieces already. No goals. Shots on goals are limited, but he's already got his head on three set pieces through two games. Also, Craig Dawson, new boy for Watford. So maybe we look to pair Holobas and Dawson, the old set piece to goal combination. Maybe Watford gets a clean sheet against West Ham. Probably not, but maybe they do. And we look at Tarkowski from Burnley. He's gotten on the end of three set pieces. How about just corners taken? We mentioned set piece takers. Holobas, 9 corners. Trent Alexander, 8. Matt Ritchie, listed as a defender for FPL purposes, 7. Lucas Dean, 5. Ryan Bertrand's taken 3. And then last week, Luke Shaw took 2. So there are some options on the defensive side of things. We can look to these advanced stats to kind of narrow down that player pool, at least give us a starting point to then look at individual matchups. How big of a favorite are these teams? Where can we possibly go? All right, now how about midfield? We talked about defender a little bit. I look to goals, assists. Let's start there. Who's in form? I'm a big form guy, right? Maybe more so than anyone else in the industry. Having played the sport for 20 plus years, I went in and out of form constantly, right? The joke is form is temporary, class is permanent. Okay, I had form. I thought I had class, but I had form. If I had class, I'd still be playing this damn game, making a bunch of money, but I had form. Now, granted, I had bits of form that were years long, perhaps, but you go throughout the season, in and out of form. everything's just working for you. Some things aren't, especially as you move closer to the goal. I'm more inclined to look at the in-form player than someone who's not. Take a perfect example, Ashley Barnes, and I'll get to forward here in a second. How can you not take a look at him week two after his beautiful performance week one? He took his shots well, took touches well, found good spots, and buried his chances when he got in there. Now, his price in the matchup wasn't great, so I didn't play him, but you have to be looking towards players like that. That led me to Pukki. And again, maybe I'm just jumping to forward already, but when I saw him play against Liverpool, a team much, much better than Norwich, a team that had the ball much, much more to Norwich, a player who, when he got the ball, didn't have much support, right? It's not like Norwich were bombing players forward, yet still was getting in good areas, taking on defenders, and getting shots off. Not only shots off, but good shots, shots on goal. Scored a goal against Liverpool. Then I look at next week's, last weekend's matchup, and I'm thinking, all right, Norwich at home, this is a spot we can attack. You start looking at these advanced stats for forwards, and we'll just go ahead and go into it. Final third touches. Not only that, but let's look at penalty touches. Touches inside the box. You know who leads the league in penalty touches? Pukki. 15, in fact. Number two, Ashley Barnes. Number three, Harry Kane. Number four, Aubameyang. Number five, Firmino. Those guys sound like pretty good players, right? Penalty touches for forwards, very good advanced statistic to include in any kind of model or any kind of research that you're looking at. Who's getting in good areas and who's getting service in those good areas? It's one thing to make good runs, beat defenders, get in front of your defender, but the guy can't get a cross off or he's shanking it out of bounds for a goal kick. Not going to help you out too much. Another one, goal attempts. Pukki leading the league again with goal attempts, 10. Ashley Barnes, 9. Kane, 9. Aubameyang, 7. Firmino, 6. So what do we see here? Penalty touches lead to goal attempts, which leads to goals. Top two goal scorers from a forward position, Pukki with 4, Ashley Barnes with 3. So again, we look towards penalty touches, goal attempts, final third touches, form, all these things we look at from a forward position. Now, how about midfield? Final third touches, again, corners taken. I look at set pieces as well. Who's leading the midfield position in final third touches? Perhaps the best player in the EPL, Kevin De Bruyne, 87. Number two, James Maddison, 79. Number three, Raheem Sterling with 75. Now, one player I wanted to mention who comes in at 5th in final third touches for the midfield position is Buendia, who's benefited greatly from the new scoring system on DraftKings, the shots assist, the accurate passes, the set pieces, etc. Typically, on the cheaper side of things from a DFS perspective and getting in these good areas to make an impact on the game and on your score sheet. Now, corners taken from the midfield position, James Maddison, 17 corners. I mentioned it earlier. 6 more than the second place finisher, Eric Lamella with 11. Probably be shocked to hear this. Mo Salah has 10 corners taken, Kevin De Bruyne 10, Buendia 9, and James Ward-Prowse 9. So a couple little things that I look at, like I said, from defenders, just final third touches, some set pieces, midfielders, final third touches, goals assist, corners, set pieces, and then, of course, forwards. I really look at those penalty touches and goal attempts to narrow down my player pool. Now, with anything that we look at, the more information we can input into our system, the better results we can get. When you look at projections, ownership projections, your model is only as good as the information that's put in. If I put in horrendous models or horrendous numbers, it's going to spit out inaccurate or misleading numbers. Inputs are important. Good inputs give you good outputs. So who are the outputs for this weekend? Now, of course, I break down every single game on elitefantasy.com. I talk about a number of different players, whether they be cash or GPP. We have cheat sheets. We have FPL articles. I'm in the chat room talking through team news updates, which is extremely important, which put us on Harry Wilson last week. He was written up in my article. I said, hey, there's a chance that Harry Wilson gets a start. Bournemouth needs something to change. His left foot is wicked. He's only 4,900, I believe, on DraftKings. If he starts, let's go. We do see his name in the team news for the 10 o'clock slate. I say, shove him in, boys. He's in our core 4. Just do it. So those updates are huge. But who do we like this week? I'm going to go through just a few players at each position. And as I said, much, much more in-depth, deeper breakdown on elitefantasy.com for subscribers. At forward, I like Marcus Rashford as a spend-up this week. I mean, he pops up not at the very top, but in the top eight in every single advanced statistic we look at. Not only that, they're playing Crystal Palace at home. They're big favorites. Crystal Palace stink at the moment, even though typically they're better on the road than they are at home. Doesn't mean they're better than Manchester United. But Rashford has 47 final third touches, 6 goal attempts in 2 games. He's back on penalty duty. You have to imagine after Pogba misses that. So just adds to the allure. And his price is reasonable. He's just over 10K, I believe. 10.3. How about on the lower end? Danny Ings is a player I'm targeting as well. Not necessarily for cash, but certainly going to be in my GPP builds. Why he didn't start last week? Don't know. It's beyond me. He provided a spark off the bench, comes in, scores a goal, and he's essentially free, right? He's 5.6K on DraftKings. Knowing Southampton's system and the fact that they need a point, they have to start Danny Ings. And basically for him being free, I'll take a shot on him. But you know who's even less than Danny Ings? Danny Ceballos. I get it. The DK algorithm sees Liverpool and thinks, oh God, we got to lower these prices for the Arsenal players. This is a man who's on set pieces, who's shown the ability from open play. How do you not play Danny Ceballos at 5.5K? It's a tough matchup, but Jesus, just do it. Just plug him in. Move on. Now, indeed, he's an interesting player. He's one I'm watching, but at 5.3 on DK, that price is creeping up a little bit outside of my comfort range. But right there in that same area is Manuel Lanzini for West Ham. 5.7K, yeah, they're on the road, but it's Watford, like we talked about. Who cares about Watford at this point? You think they're going to limit Lanzini's production? I think once Wilshire's out of the game and Fornals comes in, maybe it hurts Lanzini a little bit, but we haven't seen that from the opening whistle. I think Lanzini outperforms his price at 5.7K. The spend up at midfield, pretty obvious. James Maddison. The big debate is going to be Trent Alexander-Arnold. Do you spend up and pay the 6.6K for Trent Alexander-Arnold? My answer is no. I'm going to take spend ups, like I mentioned, at midfield and forward, Rashford and Maddison. For me, there are cheaper players available who will produce at or above the point per dollar level of Trent Alexander-Arnold. Now, what's the argument for TAA? Well, guaranteed points. For whatever reason, Andy Robertson off to a slow start this year, not really producing from a DFS or FPL, by the way, damn it, perspective. But TAA has been still on set pieces, even with James Milner in last week. So do you take the safe points? Is he Lucas Digne for this weekend's slate? 6.6 is a lot for TAA. And by the way, I think Arsenal's decent and they will attack. So I'm not sure TAA is going to be bombing up and down the right side the entire game. How about just Holobus? I just mentioned he's taken 9 corners. How about the Sheffield United defenders? There are other options that I think we can go to. And if we want to look at, hey, just GPP options, how about Lewis Dunk? 3.5K. The big fella on Brighton who's maybe good. Maybe. I didn't think they were any good, but maybe they are. 3.5K. He gets on the end of one of those set pieces, we're dancing naked. Virgil van Dijk, only 4K. Could get the clean sheet. Been dangerous on set pieces as well. There's plenty of other options to save some cash at the defender spot and pay up elsewhere. Goalkeepers, no, no, no. You're not getting my goalkeeper breaking on this podcast. Check out the article for that. Now, how about some bets? I know that's why a lot of you are here. Like I mentioned, 3-0-1 on the pod with free bets. And today I have 2 for you. We'll get the weekend off to a fast start with a little Friday action. I don't typically bet this, but give me the under 2.5 goals at +110 odds with Aston Villa and Everton. Aston Villa, we have the bet in. I think they could be bottom come Christmas. They've shown the ability to play. They've spent a boatload of money, but it's going to take a while, a bit like West Ham last year or even a Fulham, for all that talent to gel. And I can't see them scoring more than a goal. I have them at about one, just under one goal against Everton, whose defense has been super solid. And Everton themselves are really struggling to score. Again, have some new pieces, kind of molding everything together. The wee man, Bernard, scores last week. If you're banking on Bernard scoring every week, you're not going to put up many goals. So give me that under 2.5. And now how about Saturday? I have three bets in the article already. I'm giving you two. I'm going to have at least two more bets. I'm waiting for the numbers to kind of go my way a touch before we place them. Give me the over 2.5 goals, minus 135, United and Palace. Again, Palace, a little bit better on the road. United does look decently solid at the back, but you got to think to both games. They gave up a goal to Wolves, a hell of a screamer by Ruben Neves, right? Not much you can do. Bends it around two players. De Gea is diving, finds the wee little corner up in the top right. But I go back to Chelsea. It could have been 2-0 Chelsea before United went on to win that game 4-0. So a little bit of a shaky Manchester United defense, plus their ability to get forward, create chances, and the inability of Crystal Palace to defend. Give me that over 2.5. So again, Friday, under 2.5 for Everton, plus 105. Saturday morning, over 2.5, minus 135 in the Manchester United Crystal Palace game. That's going to do it for this week's Talking Soccer podcast. Big shout out to Jace's dad, who left a glowing review for your boy on iTunes. Don't think I don't check that. I'm not doing it every 2 seconds, but I'm doing it every 4 seconds. I want to see some reviews on iTunes. Go to the Guru Elite Podcast. Rate, review, subscribe. Shoot me a message on Twitter. I'll give you a nice shout out. But that's going to do it for this week's Talking Soccer. Adios, amigos.